Angie's List is now Angie, the nation's largest home services marketplace. And Angie is here to help homeowners get all their jobs done well. Angie has helped over 150 million homeowners care for their homes. Whatever your home project, big or small, indoor or outdoor, come to Angie to connect with and hire skilled professionals to get the job done well. My son needed a major yard cleanup at his new home. We went straight to the Angie website and found a bunch of local, reliable, and affordable pros to handle the job, and one did pronto. Angie can help you find the best price for your project. Angie lets you request and compare quotes from multiple pros in just a few taps, or book services at an upfront price based on local data. Angie has cost guides that tell you what others have paid for similar projects, both nationally and in your area. Get started at Angie.com. That's ANGI.com, or download the app today. The app and website are free to use.
Hello, and welcome to the Victor Davis Hanson Show. Victor is the Martin and Neely Anderson Senior Fellow in Military History and Classics at the Hoover Institution and the Wayne and Marcia Buskey Distinguished Fellow in History at Hillsdale College. Welcome to everybody. This is our Friday news roundup. We've got lots to talk about. We're going to start off with Trump and the Colorado ballot. So stay with us and we'll be right back.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Welcome back to the Victor Davis Hanson Show. Victor can be found at his website, victorhanson.com, and it is called The Blade of Perseus. Please come join us at the website. Well, Victor, it looks like the Colorado Supreme Court has confirmed or allowed that Trump can be excluded from the Colorado ballot. And I know that there's lots of news out there on that, and I was wondering your thoughts on it.
Well, that is a, there's so many things to say about that, but remember that that was an amendment that was passed 160 years ago for a specific purpose, Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. It has a lot about birthright. And that's been discussed as well, whether a person born in the United States from foreign parents has a right to be a citizen or not. Anchor babies, the whole thing. But Section 3 came out of the conundrum of the Civil War because the Republicans had it made during the Civil War because the Democratic Party had split and two-thirds went south. And the other third, the Union Loyalist, such as they were, and there was a lot of copperheads, were outnumbered by the Republicans. So the Civil War is over. They reunite these states in, and guess what? They want to take all of their Democratic senators and representatives and combine with the Democratic Party in the North, the Loyalist or Union Democrats, and then restore the two-party system and take over. And of course, this amendment barred people, anybody who had held a federal office and who had joined the insurrection could not be eligible for a federal office after 1865. So this was a way of helping Reconstruction, where people were denied the franchise to vote in the South, and you had black legislators at the Senate and House level under Reconstruction that were all black and Republican. So it was a specific element in Section 3, and it had a it was very funny that it talks about, everybody says, well, if you supported, it's really if you supported the Confederacy, but they're trying to use it for general insurrection. But they have a clause that says anybody who gives aid to their enemies, thereof, of the United States. So, my gosh, is this going to start off people saying Joe Biden gave help to Central American countries that were trying to flood us deliberately to overrun our border? He didn't. Did John Kerry give aid to the Iranians during the Trump administration, where he met Mr. Jafar in Paris and he kept trying to sabotage the process of getting out of the Iran deal? I mean, there's no end to it. But that's just a side thought, a subtext. The real issue is Donald Trump has never been charged with insurrection. He much less has been convicted of it. So you have four judges who say that we're going to take his name off the ballot because he's guilty of a crime for which he's never been charged. But we, by judicial fiat, will be judge, jury, and executioner. We're going to say, you, in our opinion, are an insurrectionist, and we found you guilty of insurrection, and therefore we're going to punish you by insurrection by taking your name off the ballot. So that's one problem. The second problem is even weirder, and that is, was he an insurrectionist? We know what insurrection. Edward Luttwak wrote a brilliant little book, How to Start a Coup. You should all read it. It's kind of tongue-in-cheek, but it's really a brilliant. You take the radio station. You have an armed coup. You take the palace. Your guys are armed. You take all the means of communication. The insurrectionist-in-chief, Donald Trump, never went to the Capitol. And when he addressed this law, this legal right to protest, he said, you're going to go over to the Capitol and protest peacefully and patriotically. Insurrectionists don't call to be patriotic, and they don't say to be peaceful. And of course, you can't have an insurrection unless you have a master conspiratorial plan. None has ever been followed. And you have to have at least one person that has a firearm, right? You're going against the Capitol Police, the FBI, the U.S. military. No, nobody inside the Capitol had a firearm. So that's one thing. It doesn't qualify for an insurrection. And if it did, what would be the anti-insurrectionist reaction to a real insurrection? So they're saying it was real insurrection. If it was real insurrection, the FBI wouldn't now be denying that they had FBI informants everywhere. They'd say, we rose to the occasion. There was an insurrection, so we just flooded the zone with informants and FBI agents. But they're saying the opposite. And Nancy Pelosi wouldn't have said, I don't want any, hey, don't bring any more law enforcement. We don't need the Capitol Police. She would have been saying, and I stopped the insurrection, but I swarmed the zone. I brought as many law enforcement as I could. But the people in the Capitol Police said just the opposite, that she didn't want anybody. And if it was a real insurrection and you were anti-insurrectionist, you would want as much transparency when you investigate it. You wouldn't have the January 6th committee where you only had two Republicans and their only qualifications were twofold. A, they hated Donald Trump, and B, they were inert and they were never going to be in Congress again because nobody wanted to vote for them. They were apostates. And then you would keep all of the records. You wouldn't destroy them. You would release all the videos to prove your case. But they did just the opposite. And then they would be transparent about who died. We heard for months that Ashley Babbitt, the military veteran, the 115-pound woman who committed a problem misdemeanor by going through a broken window, who was shot dead while unarmed. And that happens in America, boy, that police officer's face is everywhere. They suppressed Officer's Byrd identity for months, months. And then they made up a complete lie that Officer Sicknick was killed by protesters. You don't do that. If you're sure it's an insurrection and you want everybody to know, why make up all this stuff?
Yeah, exactly.
So that was the second point. I'm getting warmed up, Sammy.
Oh, okay.
So, number three, once you say that a blue state can declare somebody de facto an insurrectionist because they gave aid to the enemy or they were engaged in insurrection activity, where do you stop? Okay, I'll give you three examples. Kamala Harris in July of 2020, in the midst of 120 days of Antifa, Black Lives Matter orchestrated violence across state lines, which I think was racketeering, 35 to 40 dead, 1,500 police officers injured, $2 billion in damage, torched the St. John's Episcopal Church, torched a police precinct, torched a federal courthouse, tried to swarm. They didn't just swarm. They didn't just put on buffalo horns and bare chest and parade around with American flags. They tried to get into the White House grounds and knock down the fence to such a degree that the Secret Service put Donald Trump and his wife in an underground bunker. Okay, that went on for 120 days. 14,000 arrests. And in the middle of that, what did Kamala Harris do? Soon to be vice president designate. She said, this will not stop, nor should it stop. It will go on. I want to repeat, this will go on. It'll go on to election. It'll go on after. She was egging it on to such a degree that all the left-wing fact checkers, which is a redundancy, they're the same thing. They said, well, this is, she wasn't calling for violence because technically she said she was referring to demonstrators and not all the demonstrators were. So they understood what she was doing. So should Texas, Alabama, Wyoming, Montana just say, I'm sorry, we can't put Kamala on the general ballot. She's an insurrectionist, and here's what she said. And as far as the 14th Amendment, it says you cannot give aid to people who attack the United States. Well, she bailed out these people that were burned a federal courthouse. It's a good example. How about Chuck Schumer? He was on TV talking about democracy. And if you resist a federal subpoena from a court, you know, from the Congress, you are a lawbreaker. Okay, he went in front of a throng, a mob, if you will, right at the doors of the Supreme Court, while they were in there, and he screamed, Gorsuch, Kavanaugh, you sowed the wind, you're going to reap the whirlwind. It seems like a threat to me, but then he, if you were any doubt listener, he elaborated on it. He said, you're not going to know what's hit you. That's a threat of violence. Mm. So you have a federal official, kind of fits the statute of the 14th Amendment, Section 3, a federal official threatening an insurrectionary act against his own Supreme Court. Okay, so Mississippi says can't have anybody on the ballot that does that. And you know what? Maybe because he supports Biden, we'll just take the whole insurrectionary ticket and keep it off the ballot. And let's let the Supreme Court adjudicate. Or maybe you say Joe Biden deliberately undermined federal immigration law. He let in 8 million people. They broke the law. He encouraged them. He said in 2019, surge to the border. Exact quote. And then he allowed 8 million to live here, reside here illegally. So he violated his oath of office to enforce the laws as they were written. He destroyed federal immigration law as well as the border. Is he going to be held as an insurrectionist? Look at the damage he did. He did a lot of damage to this country. It'll be, take years to recover from the cost and the adjudication of 8 million people who had no business breaking the law under the encouragement of Joe Biden. So you can see that each state has that ability now to do that. And finally, I mean, this is not new. This is a sorry chapter in a long novel of Get Trump. They have all of the institutions, as we keep saying, corporate boardroom, popular culture, academia, K through 12, Silicon Valley, media, social media, etc. But they don't have the people. So 51% of the people do not like Joe Biden. In fact, only 33% do. And they don't like any of his agenda at all, polls below. So they know that. So they're trying to use extra legal, institutional, bureaucratic means to achieve a result that they can't achieve at the ballot. And so this joins what? At this point, do you think that one person on the left would say the following? I'm sorry about Russian collusion. I fanned those flames. I said that phony dossier of Christopher Steele was genuine. I lied about the paywall that was the DNC, the Perkins Coie, the Fusion GPS, the Christopher Steele, Hillary Clinton, the effort to hide those illegal payments to a foreign national. I spread the lie about the Alpha Bank ping and said that Donald Trump's computers in Trump Tower were were pinging and communicating in a collusionary fashion with the Alpha Bank in Russia. That was a lie. I apologize about the lie right before a presidential debate in 2020, right before the election, in fact. I was one of the 51 intelligence authorities that deliberately lied when I knew that that laptop was authentic. The FBI had it for a year. They kept it under wraps, but I lied for the greater good of stopping Donald Trump. And I was one of the people who voted two times to impeach a first-term president the moment he lost the House. Never happened before. And I was one of the people who supported trying a private citizen in the Senate on an impeachment trial after he left. And I was one of the people who made sure that we raided the home of an ex-president for the first time in history in a matter of a dispute over confidential presidential papers, national security papers, which had always been adjudicated bureaucratically and civilly. So this is just one of those many things that they've been doing, because they control institutional power, media, communications, but they don't have confidence that their message and their leaders will appeal in an open and fair and transparent election. Yeah. That's their problem, and that's what they're doing. And this is just another chapter in that saga, as I said.
Yeah. Do you think that they will get away with this in the sense that the Supreme Court of the United States needs to decide before they print the ballots, which I believe is in January? And do you think they've put it up against this wall, deciding this right at this moment so that the Supreme Court doesn't have time to do that?
Well, I think the Supreme Court can do what it wants. It's the highest court of one. If they take this up, they can say, they can give it extensions. They can do anything to rectify an error on the lower court. Yeah. They've done that a lot. But I think it was more than the presidential ballot, because the Colorado ballot's not going to matter. Trump was not going to win Colorado, nor did he need to win Colorado.
No. Yeah.
What they're doing is this. They're doing two things. They want California, Illinois, New York, Colorado, the big blue states, Washington, Oregon, to all do this. And then they want to create a sense of momentum, and that this is the majority view, so that the only states that matter, Arizona, Nevada, Georgia, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Michigan, will feel that they're intimidated or they're coerced or they want to join a winning hand, number one. And the second is, we have one-third of the Senate and all of the House up. If you don't have the head of your party on that ticket, mm-hmm. and this extends from the primary ballot disqualification, as they say it will, to the general, then it's going to hurt the Republican down ticket. And that's one of the reasons they're doing it.
Yeah.
And finally, all of this lawfare, this serial impeachment, this media distortion, misinformation, all of this stuff that has all proved to be bogus, they all admit it, it's predicated on one thing, that we, the left, are so morally superior and so intellectually adept that we have a God-given right to use any means necessary to stop these forces of Neanderthal darkness. And so we're going to do it. Or translated into reality, it means something like this. We are the children and you are the adults. We are the adolescents. We're the guy that gets a beer and takes the car out and wrecks it, and we expect somebody to pay the insurance on it. Dad. So what I'm getting at is, they have a system of pushing the envelope, jumping the shark, doing the most outrageous things, predicated on one thing, that the right and the conservatives would never do the same or reply in kind. Because if they did, it would be tit for tat, yang for yang, warp and woof, and it would just go into a descending chaos that would lead to civil war. So they think, well, conservatives are, I don't know, they're too inept, they're too stupid, they're too concerned with their family, they're too concerned with their career, their church, their community, money, they're too preoccupied, they're too careless, who knows, disinterested, but they won't reply in kind. And you can see it right now with whistleblowers. All of a sudden, whistleblowers are terrible after we canonize them. All of a sudden, getting a subpoena is horrible if you're a child of the president. All of a sudden, you can't impeach a president in his first term. even though they did it twice. So they just expect us to take that hypocrisy. And I think this time they went too far. I really do. I think people across the nation are going to say, you know what? If four people are able to disenfranchise 6 or 7 million voters, and that's going to be a precedent, and these people, by fiat, can arbitrarily tell a candidate that he is guilty of a crime that he has not even been charged for, and then they can further say that after he's convicted, they're going to take him off a ballot and deny millions of people a right to vote for him, then there's going to be a repercussion.
Yeah.
And I'll leave it with that. I'm not going to advocate anything or suggest anything. I think it's kind of reckless to say there's going to be a civil war or any of that sort. But I think the Republicans and the conservatives are going to say, you know what? We haven't gone full Lee Atwater since 1988.
Yeah.
And it's just coincidental that 1988 was the last time we won 51% of the presidential vote.
Yeah.
And that's when we just said, Michael Dukakis, he's ahead 17 points. He's got this facade that's phony. Boston Harbor ad, tank ad, Willie Horton ad. And when they got done with him, he was done for.
Yeah.
And then they said, oh my God, we don't do things like that. That's not who we are. We're a party of Mitt Romney and John McCain. Lee, you got him elected, but see ya, wouldn't want to be ya.
Yeah.
And we never did it again.
You know, what you seem to be saying to me is that the Democrats are expecting a party of Mitt Romney's, and now
yes.
and they're actually facing a party of MAGA people. And
they are
absolutely freaked out about it.
They don't understand MAGA.
They don't
understand it because they're scared of it. They don't understand. I live in a community where it's 95% Mexican-American. 50% of them are going to vote for Trump.
Yeah.
It's either, as they say, it's either men and women sports, it's live birth abortions, it's $6 a gallon gas, it's all of that stuff, and they don't want it.
Yeah.
It's $175 for Romax and $90 for a sheet of plywood, and they can't live like that.
Yeah.
And they don't want to do it anymore.
Yeah.
So I think they're shocked. I wouldn't push. I've been given a great window during my life, and that is I'm 70, and from the age of 18, I drove over to UC Santa Cruz, and then I came back. And then I drove as a graduate student to Stanford, and then I came back. And then I was a visiting professor at Stanford and a fellow at the Center for Behavioral, and I came back. And for the last 20 years, I've been doing that. I retired from Cal State Fresno, and I've been going from the San Joaquin Valley to Palo Alto and back. And what I'm getting at is those are the two extremes of political life in America. There is no more conservative area than rural Fresno or Kings or Tulare County. And there's no more left-wing area in the country than the Bay Area. And I can tell you that what most people think about that dichotomy is absolutely wrong. I was a pretty good professor and writer. I had some success, but I was not a good farmer because it's very hard to be a good farmer. It takes a lot of intelligence. What I'm getting at is the people that I live out here that are welders and farmers, they're very smart people. And the people I associate with at Stanford, and I see some of the faculty and students, I'm hardly impressed. I can take a lot of those people, and they would be completely inept if they all their rhetoric was reified and they thought they were going to have a civil war or they were going to do this to these people. They're inept. And the people who are middle America, they know how to do things. And so, and I can see it firsthand.
Yeah.
And so I'm not, they're not, the MAGA, the conservative base, the conservative 51%, they're not scared of these people. They're angry at these people because they feel that they've been asleep and they ceded to them the landscape of politics and they abused their privileges and now they want to say no more. And I think you're going to see, I think even some of the Democrats are kind of afraid now. They're saying, don't do this. You know, we told you not to do it with the Russian collusion hoax. We told you not to do it with a laptop. We told you not to impeach him twice, once over a phone call. We told you not to try him as a private citizen. We told you not to stalk that January 6th committee with two phony Republicans. We told you not to go raid his house and then rearrange all of the stuff on the ground and take a picture of it. We told you not to turn that buffoonish riot into a so-called insurrection. And we've told you just leave him on the ballot and let people decide. You got more money than Trump does. Volleyball, as I keep, you know, beating that dead horse, laid it all out in 2021, her Time article, about how they had a conspiracy in the cabal to change voting laws that made a big difference. Just, you know, just do that. Just try to vote if that's what you do, but don't keep changing the rules, impeaching, destroying people, lying, and disinformation, all this stuff. If you keep doing it, something's going to happen, and it's not going to be good for you. And I think maybe it'll be a landslide. I think the most likely, when I say it's not going to be good, if Donald Trump wins, or whoever the Republican, I'm not going to prejudge it. I'm a journalist, historian, it's my job not to be an advocate. So whoever wins, they're not going to screw around like 2017. There's not going to be Omarosas and all those people and the Mooch and then left-wing people masquerading as centrists that try to undermine, like in the manner of Anonymous and all that.
Yeah.
The whole problem with Kelly and all the general, all that, it's not going to happen. They're going to get conservative loyalists and they're going to do what Barack Obama did. They're going to go into the DOJ and get rid of the people like Obama did. And they're going to start having hearings and they're going to get an agenda and they're going to hit the ground running. Sort of like what Reagan did the first 90 days.
Yeah, I look forward to that.
Yeah, I think everybody does. And I think this 2024, there's going to be a different type of campaigning as well. And I would just say one last thing to all the big donors of the Republican or conservative side. Whatever you want, whoever you want to give, I know that they don't want to give to Trump. And many of them wanted to give to DeSantis. And now, like the Koch brothers are giving $70 million to Haley. But Haley's not going to win the nomination. I know that because the base will not vote for her. And I think that might be a mistake. If she happened to win, that would be a big mistake. I would vote for Haley over Joe Biden, yes, or Kamala Harris, yes, in a heartbeat.
Or Gavin Newsom.
But, you know, like Tucker, didn't Tucker say today that he wouldn't vote for Trump if Haley was the vice president candidate?
Yeah, I think it was Tucker.
I think that's rhetorical on his part. I don't know. I mean, but my point is they have to unite. And if Donald Trump or DeSantis is the nominee, people who give money should support them and give like they never gave before, because this is our last chance.
Yeah.
And these people are not Democrats, they're not progressives, they're hardcore socialist revolutionaries, and they have an agenda. And if you don't think they have an agenda, you look at what those three presidents testified before Congress when they said that they would not condemn genocide and the destruction of Israel unless there was a context. And we know that's a lie because they condemn people all the time without context.
Yeah.
So basically they were saying, we are scared stiff of the diversity, equity, inclusion, and we have a special rule for Jews and white males. And we can do whatever we want to them. So there you have it. And that revolution has been completed. It's finished. They won. They took over the university. I think they've taken over the mainstream media. I think they've taken over K through 12, but they haven't taken over yet all the reins of government.
Yeah.
And there's still people, there's really good House members. Those House members that grilled all these supposed brilliant college presidents with their PhDs and titles and alphabet, they just destroyed them.
Yeah. Stephanie.
They were 10 times smarter.
Yeah.
Colleen Gray was just rendered a child.
Yeah.
Stefanik, she just shredded her.
Well, on a little more maybe escapist tone, this Christmas, a new film from director George Clooney arrives. It's a rags-to-riches absolute crowd-pleaser based on a number one New York Times best-selling book. The inspirational true story is about the 1936 University of Washington College rowing team that competed for gold at the Summer Olympics in Berlin. One of the most difficult sports in the world, it's sure to inspire you. This team rowed out of need to eat, need to sleep, and it gave them an edge that captures the power of working together to overcome all odds while rowing for America. They don't make movies like this anymore, and it's filled with wholesome content, and it makes the ideal multi-generational movie for the holidays. Joel Edgerton and Callum Turner star in this exciting and incredible story of courage, hard work, and determination, showcasing America at its best. Believe in each other. Believe in the impossible. Boys in the Boat opens Christmas Day in theaters only. Get tickets now. Boysintheboatmovie.com. That's boysintheboatmovie.com. So get your tickets sooner. Get ready. It's going to be out on Christmas Day. Sounds like a great story. I think I'm going to go see it myself. There's not a whole lot of movies out there, but this Boys in the Boat sounds like it might be a good one. So, Victor, let's turn to immigration, and I could tickle the ears of your listeners with the 2.2 million that came across the border illegally that were apprehended in 2022, and over 4 million this year of the ones that were apprehended. And talk to you, too, about the new law in Texas that gives local judges power to deport and makes border crossing a state crime. But I think that the more interesting story is the selling of passport-free transit from Africa to the United States. And, you know, by, they think, the cartel, and they're bringing them over from the African nation into places like Nicaragua or Venezuela and transporting them then up to the border. And it's there's lots and lots of people coming from everywhere in the world now.
You know, it's 8 million people. 60 to 65% are on federal subsidies, state subsidies. It's going to be hundreds of billions of dollars just to accommodate them with health, housing, food, legal, educational subsidies. It was very funny. They had people they interviewed, and they said, are you going to work? And they said, no. So this is different, in both in magnitude 8 million, than past surges at the border, because for the first time, there's no effort to stop it. It's everybody's, it was kind of like that CNN, was it CNN or MSNBC, where they said it was mostly peaceful demonstration, there's flames behind, licking the clouds. So it's when Corinne Jean-Pierre or Mayorkas or Biden said it's secure, and they look at this, they say, what are they doing? So what are they doing? Why do they want to bring in 8 million people after they expelled 8,400 from the military for not getting a vaccination? They have no idea whether these people are vaxxed. They have no idea whether they have measles. They have no idea whether they're criminals. Well, so, and they know that. So why is it? Because they want constituents? They think that they're going to sue someday and get illegals to vote, or that the system is so porous with mail-in and early balloting that they can get them in and vote, or their kids will be a permanent constituency? Or is it because they believe in their books that are titled The New Democratic Majority, or Demography is Destiny? I'm quoting from titles now. Of course, they call it Great Replacement Theory when anybody else quotes them in a derogatory fashion. But it's bizarre. When you just see these people, you just yell at your screen, why are they doing this? If I go 70 miles an hour in a 55, I get a $400 ticket. Look what they're doing. Who wants this? There's nobody who wants it. And that brings the second point that I wanted to make. The reason they got away with it before was it was almost entirely Latino. And when I say Latino, until recently, it was mostly from Mexico. And they knew by experience that first, second, and third generation Mexican nationals who became legal residents, who became citizens, voted Democratic. Okay? But 50% of these people are not from Latin America. They're from Africa. They're from Asia. There's 30,000 of them from China came in recently. So it's not a resident issue. So when border towns are being flooded, And these border states, Arizona, New Mexico, California, and Texas, are being flooded. Suddenly, the Mexican-American community says, well, it's not our guys anymore. It's not my cousin. I don't want these people here. I don't even know who they are. And so the tribal argument is gone. And the second thing is, thanks to Ron DeSantis, he was the one that started it. They started to bust them. First, iconically, to Martha's Vineyard. We know how that turned out. And then concretely to New York and Chicago and Seattle and Los Angeles and San Francisco and Fresno. And you can see that. You can see what happens. And all of a sudden, these blue state mayors are saying, oh, my God, didn't you understand what I was doing? I was virtue signaling. I was performance arting. I was never going to be subject to the consequences of my own ideology. You know how the game's played. You're a racist to do that, to embarrass me. So that's the second element that is really changes the dynamic and withers and erodes support for this. And the third is, and you mentioned it in passing, the cartels control half of Mexico. About 40% of Mexican nationals work in some fashion for a conglomerate controlled by the cartels or for the cartels themselves. So we're just fueling these cartels. And they have millions of people along the border and in the United States. Not far from where I live, there was an execution about 2 years ago where they went into a person's house and executed four of them. They were drug dealers, apparently, supposedly, that hadn't paid the cartel off. They murdered a woman and a young child. And they're ruthless. And people are scared of them. I've had people tell me that they don't even object when they see an M13 or any of these people because they have the ability, if they're deported, to go back to Mexico and they know where they live in the San Joaquin Valley. They can come back in 2 days. They call them on their cell phone and say, if you tell anybody what I did or you don't like me picking on your kid, I'll be back. You can deport me. I'll be back. And they can. And so the cartels are out of control, and that's scaring people. Yeah. And the funny thing is, it's very easily prevented. After all the court lawsuits, all of the left-wing delays in Congress, all of the apostates among the Trump first administration appointees that were deliberately undermining him in Homeland Security, DOD, DOJ, he finally started to build the wall or replace the wall that was rickety and then had just started on the new section. He got rid of catch and release. He got rid of refugee status, claimed once you got here, you had to do it back from your home country. And he was deporting people. And you know what? It almost stopped. And all you have to do is deport 20,000 people. Just go to Chicago and just say, can you prove you're a U.S. citizen or you have a legal green? Oh, you don't. So you're an illegal alien. You're going to get on the bus and you're going to go back to Oaxaca. And just do that and the word gets out. And they can stop it in 2 seconds. And if people are serious about it, they want to elect a Republican Congress and White House, then they can. It'll stop.
Yeah.
It'll stop in 6 months.
This article, and I'm sorry, I can't remember whose article I was reading, was making the argument that they're doing all this and letting this mass amount of people in so that there will be no choice but to give mass amnesty.
Yeah, absolutely.
But that doesn't really have to be done. Don't you think we could slowly over time just deport all these
people?
No,
you don't have to give anybody amnesty.
I don't think so.
No, you can just say, you know what? We just deported 30,000 this month, and we're going to get to you because at some point, you're going to have to come in contact with the government. You have to get your welfare check. You may be pulled over in a traffic citation. You might go into the disability office, but you will come and you might have to get a DMV license. You might want to get your trader registration renewed, and we're going to find out if you're here illegally in our computer base, and we're going to come right to you and deport you. And all of the screaming and yelling, the New York Times, Washington Post, NPR, this is so horrible, it's racist. No, what's mean and cruel is what's going on now. Yeah. Because it's saying to poor people who are U.S. citizens, screw you. Stand in line at your diabetes, insulin government place, your kidney dialysis, your emergency room, your cardiac visits. Just stand in line because we have 8 million people that rate above you. Yeah. And you know what? They gave us a big, long lecture about real IDs. Remember that? Real IDs. You're going to have your power bill. You're going to have a passport plus your license. Then we're going to have a little thing that says real ID. And then they discovered something right during COVID, but after, people were just ignoring it. So they said, well, next year it really counts and you won't be able to get on a plane because we don't know who you are. Well, uh-oh. That would be racist because a lot of people who are marginalized people haven't done this. So it'll be next year and next year. Well, finally they say it's next year. But you know what they're doing right now? They're letting people fly all over the country without real IDs. I went to the airport and they had a special sign about migrants. So people are so tired of the asymmetry that you enforce a law much harder on a U.S. citizen than you do an illegal foreign national. And they can't figure it out.
Yeah.
They just can't figure it out. And then the other issue is California's got the highest taxes in the United States in terms of highest gas taxes, highest income taxes, fourth highest sales taxes, high assessments. So the property tax, even at 1 or 2% is high. And guess what? It's got a $40, $50, $60 billion deficit. And 1% of the taxpayers pay half the tax revenue. And it's still not enough. And part of the reason it's not enough is when you have 27% of the people, and the residents that weren't born in the United States, and you drive through Los Angeles or San Francisco or the Bay Area or Fresno or Modesto or Stockton or rural California, you know what you see? You see taco trucks. You see portable restaurants. You see people on intersections selling shovels, bicycles. As I said before, within a 5-mile radius of where I live, I can buy anything. Want a mattress? I can go buy it. You want a weed eater? I'll go buy it on a corner. You want me to landscape my yard and get a palm tree? I can go to the local swap meet a mile away. And I won't pay property. I won't pay sales tax. And the people who make that transaction, let me say that again, Robert, and the people who make that transaction will not pay income tax.
Yeah. Well, Victor, let's go ahead and take a break. We've been kind of a little bit loose with that, and come back and talk a little bit about the crudity of modern culture. We'll be right back.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first 3 orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and 3-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
We're back. For any of you who are on social media, especially X, Victor has a handle at VD Hansen, and he's also on Facebook. Hansen's Morning Cup is what his Facebook page is called, so come join him on social media. Victor, we've had so many stories recently. I think your listeners have noticed it too, especially perhaps the most shocking is the... I don't know how to say this, but the guy having anal sex in the Senate chambers. But also,
I think there was a word for that, Sammy. I think it was called sodomy, based on the biblical.
Is that
the biblical city of Sodom and Gomorrah, right?
Yes, and it seems like we have a bit of...
angels were in danger, what?
Yeah, it seems we have a bit of Sodom and Gomorrah going on here in the United States today. I hate to say that, but what about the guy in Pennsylvania, the school board president who took his oath on porn books or the... I think that most of them were trans dancers in the White House.
Many of them were, apparently.
Yeah. Anyway.
The White House. I don't know. I mean, if you, those dancers that went to the White House, take away the candy cane, you would have no idea it had anything to do with Christmas.
Yeah, that's true.
It could have been Easter. It could have been Halloween.
Yeah.
And then there was that guy last June at that White House party, that trans activist. Remember, he pulled up his T-shirt and he had breasts and nipples?
Yeah.
So, and that was at the White House. So the point you're making is White House, weird Christmas festivity or whatever it was, carnival, White House exposing breast, and Senate chamber unprotected anal intercourse with a guy filming it for the direct, the express purpose of putting on his social media. Mm. And he looks back, I think he had some kind of weird jock strap or something on. It was just... it was so shocking that it really startled people. And that was, remember that we arrested people and put them 3 or 4 years in prison for what? Putting their feet on Nancy Pelosi's desk on January 6th, or taking things or desecrating supposedly. And I think, you know, you shouldn't do that. But what would be more, what would be a greater desecration than to have unprotected anal sex on a Senate historic chamber that's been the scene of historic occasions and testimonies and confirmation hearings, and then you're exchanging bodily fluids through a person's anus right on there. I mean, it's just shocking. And then you're filming it, and then we come to the punchline, and that is, rather than say I'm sorry, it's they're after somebody for the type of people I love, whom I love. So this little prankster or whatever he is, this gay activist, then immediately switches from crude buffoon that desecrates the solemnity of a Senate chamber to, I'm a victim and I'm going to seek legal counsel. And they all do that. So there are no consequences. And, you know, I'm not saying that we're going to fall apart, because if you look, read that tetrad of Roman literature, to take one example that came to mind, Petronius the Satyricon, that was written somewhere around 60 AD, 65 maybe. And then you have Suetonius's Life of the 12 Caesars. That's got everything in it, believe me. Nero, Caligula, and that was written somewhere at the end of the first century AD. And then you have Tacitus's Annals, who's talking about the and histories about the 12 Caesars as well. And then you have Catullus's Republic poetry, and that's pretty graphic about sex. And I could go on. But it paints a picture of an affluent, leisured, globalized society that has transitioned very abruptly from an agrarian Italian republic to the center of the universe, where slaves and money and everything is pouring into this small place, Rome. It's now, it's gone from 150,000 citizens to 1 million. And the birth rate drops. And women, there's no such thing as, you know, women stay home and have 3 children. And there's promiscuous sex. And all the major players, whether it's Caesar or Antony, are divorced many times over. And sexuality is performance art. And yet that empire went on for 400 years. But here's the caveat. It was never the same as the Roman Republic of the old Senate. It was never the same as the people who fought the first, second, and third Punic Wars. It wasn't the same. And they're not going to produce another Aeneid. They're not going to produce another Horace. They're not going to produce any of that great late Republican literature. And they're not going to produce statesmen like Cato, the Younger or the Elder, or Cicero, or any of those people. And a lot of the philosophical writings, it's going to be over with. But it's going to be much more leisured, much cruder, much freer, and it's going to exist on its fumes for 300 or 400 years.
Yeah.
And we're sort of like that in warp speed. This can go on and on and on because the fundamentals of the country are sound, given the Constitution. But if you fray the Constitution and you warp it and distort it, as we're seeing, and you have all this money and leisure, and you have these ignorant youth that are arrogant and without any knowledge, and they're screaming from the river to the sea, you know, that's not genocide. Why is that genocide? Oh, I don't know which river. I'm just supposed to say river. Oh, which sea? Atlantic Ocean, according to the survey, I think 20% thought it was the Atlantic Ocean. Oh, really? There's 21% of Israel is Arab? I didn't know that. Well, what are we going to do with them when we kill all the Jews? So that's the state of education. And I had a very good friend who sits in on a class at Hillsdale. I won't mention names to embarrass him. He sent me today some of the Princeton classes. And our next, if I can indulge him, I won't mention his name, but the new Princeton classes. Yeah. Latinx sexualities, but that's mild. And when you look at these classes, you're going to say, well, it requires no knowledge, it requires no work. Yes, but it does fit one requirement. They are letting in students without SAT scores or competitive grade point averages that are not able to do the work that they said would be necessary to be an Ivy Leaguer.
Yeah.
And so they have to create a whole new curriculum for them.
That's sad. Well, my last story that I wanted to talk to you about was the state of New York seems to be bent on making the same mistake California did, in that they have created a reparations commission, and it seems to be starting work. But the California reparations commission, they didn't come up with anything that was passed.
They don't have the money. They before they can pay reparations, they have to pay the rent. And they don't have enough money to pay for the office in San Francisco.
Yeah.
The state is $65 billion, and by law, it has to balance their books. And 280,000 people fled the last 15, 16 months. And the top rate is 13.3. It's the highest in the nation. And the sales tax, as I said, is the fourth highest. And the gas taxes are the highest. And the power kilowatt is the highest except for Hawaii, and the price of fuel is the highest. And so there's a bill in the legislature to increase taxes to 16%. Anybody who's not farming or doesn't have some, I don't know, paid for Malibu mansion, they're going to leave. They're going to leave because they're not only paying the highest taxes, but they're hated by the people who redistribute the money. It's the California legislature's attitude is, listen, you, every dime you made, your $5 million a year salary, you didn't earn. You didn't earn. You didn't build that, to quote Elizabeth Warren. And it's ours. And we're a lot smarter than you. And we're going to keep taking this and taking this and taking this from you. And you owe us this. And by the way, you're going to give up that view in Malibu? You're not going to go to Yosemite anymore? You're not going to go sit in a hot tub in Big Sur? You're not going to look at a sunset in La Jolla? I doubt that. We have a natural paradise. Yes, we've screwed it up, but it's still a natural paradise. And you will stay, no matter how much we insult you and torment you and rob you. And I don't know if that's a sustainable idea.
Aren't they trying to tax people after they've left California to get money out of them?
Yes, they have an exit tax. And
is it passed? I mean, can they do that?
I think I've mentioned my friend that I won't mention a name, but they audit you for 3 years. That was the old way. And he got audited because he came back and did business. The first year, he used his credit card, so he left a credit card trail of more than 180 days. He got smart and used cash. The next year, they found that he was taking large amounts of cash out, so they suggested that he was coming here. The third year, he did everything right. He didn't buy gas here, credit card. He didn't take cash out. He didn't use his credit card, but he made one mistake. He should have kept his power on the whole time. but he turned his power off. He lived in a cold place. And so they audited his power bill. And they said, well, you've got 6 months where you used your heat, and then you've got a bunch of, you never used your air conditioner or your heater, so you must have been somewhere other than where you were. So under penalty of perjury, were you in California conducting business? Or you were not conducting business, you were just a resident of over 180 days. Or we don't really care if it's true, we're going to audit you and fine you, and you get a lawyer, and maybe we'll settle. And so that was the old system, and now they're trying to calibrate for maybe a decade how much money they think wasn't your salary was enhanced by being around them. We're so brilliant. We have Stanford, we have USC, we have Caltech, we have the Bay Area, we have Silicon Valley. That must have really helped you make a lot of money. Therefore, you're not making as much money as you do now, so you should pay us a difference. They're talking about that. Every lunatic idea in America starts here. You know what's so tragic about it? When I was a little boy, there was a guy named Pat Brown, and he was governor. And when he was attorney general, he was Jerry Brown's dad, but he was the old Democrat. When they wanted to make the California Water Project, guess who sued them? The Sierra Club. And guess who was the attorney general, a Democrat, that stopped that? Sierra Club. Pat Brown. In today's logic, he was a conservative, and he built highways, and he built water projects, and he built airports, and he got Glenn Dunkey in to get, you know, this CSU system. They came up with this brilliant triad. We're going to have 60 junior colleges one day. We're going to have 23 CSU campuses one day. We're going to have 9 UC campuses, and then we're going to have a noble competition because USC and Caltech and Stanford and all these private universities will have to compete with this wonderful, and they destroyed it. His son helped destroy it, and Gavin Newsom helped destroy it, and I'll be candid, Arnold Schwarzenegger helped destroy it. We had 3 great men that were governors. We had Ronald Reagan and Pete Wilson and George Dickmason. And they kept taxes low, and they kept crime down, and we had good schools. We were about 10th or 11th in the country, and they destroyed it.
Yeah.
And now you can't walk in San Francisco without getting blank on the soles of your feet. You come back to your car, it's broken into. You can't walk out at night because somebody's either a homeless person's going to throw something at you or hassle you or a smash and grabber. And if you've got a cold and you get up at 9 at night and you think, I'm going to go to the local Walgreens, it'll be closed. And if you find one, it'll be locked up for cold medicine. And then if you call somebody, I just had a student. I don't know if I mentioned this to Jack. I felt so sorry for her. I don't want to mention her name. I won't even mention where, because I've been teaching this semester. And she came in and she was so, I don't know what the word is, transparent. She just said, well, I think I made it here. My boyfriend and I were eating in an area of Los Angeles, and we were only in the restaurant for an hour, and they broke into our car, and they stole everything. And I said, well, did you lose your book? I lost my books. I lost my computer. I lost everything.
Oh, my.
And then I said, well, did you call the police? And she said, yeah. They just said, we don't react to car break-in. So I said, well, was it on film? They said, yes. The restaurant had it on film, but they said they don't investigate. It didn't rank. So that's just a blank check in Mr. Gascon's L.A. County to do what you want.
Wow.
And then I thought, just after that happened, it just happened recently, his chief of staff was a woman who said that the Los Angeles Police Department were barbarians or criminals, and he made her the chief of staff, and yet he was not recalled.
Yeah.
By these people.
They had the opportunity. Yeah.
I don't know. I guess it's a nihilist impulse that people want to destroy everything. It's really, I wrote a column, I think it was on Monday. I stayed up really late at night. I shouldn't have, because I got kind of upset when I was writing it. But it's not really left or right, Democrat or Republican, liberal or conservative. It's civilization against barbarism. It's you know, wearing a coat and tie and conducting yourself as a Senate staffer versus engaging in anal intercourse and filming it.
Yeah.
It's a question of having a nice Christmas tree or a manger or people doing the ballet or having trans dancers as if it's a Halloween festival.
Yeah.
And it's a person well-dressed and following the law and expecting to get good service in San Francisco against tiptoeing around human feces that's being, you know, washed down the storm drains and comes out in San Francisco Bay in the morning.
Yeah.
So it's really chaos. And I can see it here on my little ranch, my little 40 acres. I was walking tonight and there's a whole new trash pile. Just somebody just, I went out this morning at 5 o'clock, 5:30 in the morning, and it was dark, but I didn't see it. And now there is a, some kind of weird appliance. It looks like a little mini bar refrigerator that just, the door's open, it's just thrown out there. And then there's some tennis shoes and clothes and just scattered all over.
Mm. It's, I drive the 99 every day, and it even, it just keeps getting dirtier and dirtier, even though we pay the highest gas tax in the United States. And we have a mayor who tried very hard to clean up the freeways, and he did. And
he did
it happened for, you know, like a month or two, but they're just starting to get all dirty again with trash.
You have the idea that 27% of California's population was not born in the United States and came here from countries that were less constitutional and less affluent and had different cultural practices. And they made a choice that they, not us, they said, I don't want to live here anymore because of what this chaos is. And they came to California, and yet California did not say to them, these are the rules. You don't throw trash out the window. You don't go out in the country and look both ways and then throw out your used refrigerator. You don't take your spray can and spray M13 and cartel graffiti over every standpipe on every farm. Or you don't go in, and I'll just say I go to a food. It was funny, I'm laughing because I was at this big supermarket about 2 miles from me, and every cart has trash in it. You know what I mean? When they go shop, they leave Kleenex, they leave hand wipes, they leave newspapers.
Bags.
Yeah, they leave their bags. They just leave. They're trashy, and the people who pick it up sometimes don't want to take it out. I know some, they're starting to wear gloves. So I was trying to get a cart, and the first four carts were filthy. And the woman next to me says, well, you know, I used to do this, but now I don't do this anymore because I don't want to get my card. When I get my card, I want it clean. And I said, well, you know what? I'll just give you a polite suggestion. I think she was a first generation person. I said, you should also, when you take your groceries into your car, I know it's only about 20 yards, but take your cart and put it in the cart rack. And then it would be easier for the person to take them in and maybe they will clean them rather than just leave it scattered all over for cars to hit or, you know
sure.
what I mean?
Yeah.
Just to do that. And then take all the trash out because there is. I get up really early in the morning, and when I go to this shopping center on the west side of Selma, you wouldn't believe what it looks like in the morning from the day before. So right when they first open, 6 or 7, 5, 6, 7, they have these mobile sweepers, you know, and it looks like it's just a trash yard, and then they sweep it up. And then I go down to the local irrigation ponds sometimes when I'm driving just for the heck of it, the long way into town, and it's just Consolidated Irrigation District will clean it up, and I'll think it's looking good. 2 days later, there's a mattress every 10 feet.
Yeah.
And I don't understand why people do that. What's the ideology that I just throw stuff and then somebody's going to pick up after me that's stupid?
Yeah, or you came from some place where they didn't have huge places where everybody took their trash
but
and they paid
here.
A little
they
fine.
They have very inexpensive dumps.
I know, we do. But they came from places that's not available, so everybody just throws trash on wherever. And they came up into the United States, and they're not used to having a huge, you know, refuse place where you pay $10, $15 and you...
You know, the only time I ever got in a fight almost was I was a graduate student, and I was at the American School of Classical Studies, and we were in a bus, and the Greek bus driver, I can remember his name, was Aristo, and we were down in the Peloponnese, and every time he would eat his lunch during the break, as we were driving, he would just throw everything out the window. That's what people did in those days in Greece, kind of like 1940s America. So you could eat on the bus. So when we were doing, I had a chiropata, a cheese pie, and I had a drink, and I had it in, everybody had plastic bottle, plastic everything. So I had my trash, and we were pulling up to a site. Everybody got out, kind of moved before we stopped. So as I started to go out, I was holding it in my hand, and he got angry. And he grabbed me by the arm, and he said, throw it out the, in Greek, throw it out the window. And we were stopped. I said, I'm not going to throw it out the window. I'm going to go over there. He said, throw it out the window. And he started grabbing me, and I pushed him back. And then about the next day, I think the distributor went on the bus, and he went crazy. And he just went up and down the bus, and he collected all of the people who had eaten lunch. We were stuck there with it. And he started throwing it out the window. And I thought, I'm a guest in his country. I'm going to try to be better than what their habits are. And they've changed. If you go to Greece today, they're very conscious about not throwing trash out the windows, but not 50 years ago. So my attitude is, if you came to this country, wouldn't you say, I'm a guest and I want to be better than Americans? So I don't want to contribute, because they were so lucky and magnanimous in allowing me to come and to flee Mexico or India or Poland, whatever it is. So I'm going to be meticulous. I'm not going to throw my mattress. I'm going to investigate and find out where the county dump is. And that's not happening.
Yeah. There are some, but not enough, Victor.
There's not enough. Yeah. I keep, every time I had a lot of snow damage. I had thousands of dollars of snow damage. I think it was partly because I hired somebody who threw the snow from the apex of the roof to the eaves and then quit. And yeah. it was a tiddlywink phenomenon where an entire gable tiddlywinked in the shingles. But anyway, I was going up there, and there was a fellow who was first generation from Mexico, legal, but he was a green card holder, and I worked with him for a whole day. And you could not find a harder worker, a more polite person, and a smarter guy, because we were talking about how to reattach an entire gable. And I was trying to tell him I didn't want to take the gable apart. I wanted to keep it intact. It was falling off the house. And he came up with this idea of a 4x4 beam going across the interior studs. And it was really, we got done at the end of the day, it was much stronger than before the snow. And that's the kind of people you want. But there's no way to authenticate or adjudicate who you're getting. So you're getting some pretty bad people.
Yeah.
Or as Donald Trump said to his infamy, some bad hombres. Remember he said that when he came down?
Sure.
They thought that was pretty... I keep saying I've had four people run off the road and destroy probably cumulative over the five, I think actually, probably $30,000 or $40,000 of vines and trees and pipelines and irrigation stuff. Not one has ever paid, and not one has ever stayed at the scene of the accident, and all four of their vehicles were impounded by the highway patrol, and I was not able to. I tried once. I towed it and locked it up. And I was told by the highway patrolman he put me in jail unless I unlocked the chain. And I said, well, the car is not that bad. It must be worth $1,000. Look at that. He took out 14 trees. Well, that's your problem.
Yeah. Every time people talk about that, well, they're not all bad people coming across the border, I always think back to Nazi Germany, where only 10% of the German population were actually Nazis. So you don't need to have a whole lot of people that are bad hombres.
But say that. You shouldn't say they're not. You should say they have to be all good people. They have to be all good people because they're invited themselves here. It's not that the United States said we're poor. I mean, that happened in the corporate days where we said we need labor, so we're going to have braceros, or we're going to wink and nod, but not now. So these people are making the decision. They're not being invited by a corporation. Maybe corporations like the corporate right or the therapeutic left, but the American people have made it clear that they do not want illegal immigration. And so these people are coming against the will of the majority of Americans. And you would think that when they came, they wouldn't say to a reporter they didn't want to work. Or you would think that they wouldn't try to scam the system as they're doing with EBT cards. Or you think that their crime rate would be much lower. Or you think they wouldn't be doing what they're doing in New York sometimes. But they are.
Yeah.
And that gets people very upset.
Well, Victor, we're at the end of our show, so we're going to have to call it quits here. Thanks to all the listeners for listening to us. We really appreciate the audience. And thank you, too, Victor. We love to hear from you. It's a font of wisdom, and so you always enlighten our days.
Yes, I have to end on a very upbeat note, because this is kind of pessimistic, because today was the day, of course, where Trump was taken off the ballot. And I was on, I think, 3 TV shows a day, and it just kind of reinforced the pessimism each time I went on. I did Tucker in the morning, and then I ended up with doing a Fox Business and a Newsmax, etc. But we should all be optimistic, because I think the American people have had it, and there's more good people than revolutionaries, and they are not going to say in the 233rd year of Republic, I'm sorry, we're going to turn it over to you guys at Harvard or Yale or Stanford. You're all smarter than you are, and that's not what people died at Bellwood, and that's not what people died at Gettysburg, and that's not what people died at Choisin, and that's not what they did at Quezon, and it's not what they died for at the Bulge. They didn't die for what's happening to this country. Yeah. And we owe it to them to keep this country intact for the next generation. And if we don't, we're culpable. And so we're not going to do that. And I think of people that have had it, and they're going to come out in droves in the 24 election. They're going to give every dime they can afford to a conservative candidate.
Yeah.
I'm optimistic about that. And I think that there will be irregularities in the voting. I think there'll be Mark Zuckerberg's Zuckerberg bucks, or whatever you call them.
Zuckerbucks.
And all of that stuff will happen, and it won't be enough.
Yeah.
And so, not when the people get riled.
Yeah. That's it. This is the Victor Davis Hanson Show. This is Sammy Wink and Victor Davis Hanson, and we're signing off.